Last night, when Mike Cameron of the Seattle Mariners hit 4 home runs in one game, he joined an elite group of major leaguers whose very names, in the spirit of baseball, invite debate. Was Mike Schmidt, who did it in a 10-inning game in 1976, a player more in the class of Gil Hodges or Joe Adcock, both of whom hit 4 home runs in a single game in the 1950s, or closer to the class of Willie Mays, who did it in 1961, or Lou Gehrig, who hit 4 home runs in a game in 1932. Baseball fans thrive on such questions, and Alan Barra likes to answer them. Barra is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and now the author of Clearing the Bases, the Greatest Baseball Debates of the Last Century. For example, who was better, Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays? To that question, conventional wisdom has long answered Mays. Alan Barra says the numbers answer Mantle.
You could argue, you really could, over about an 8 or 9 year period, that Mantle could have been chosen MVP just about every season. And you'd have to go back to Babe Ruth before Gehrig and the others to find somebody that dominated his league the way Mantle did in the 50s.
So how is it that if, with benefit of hindsight, you can look back and say Mantle was the superior center fielder, how could it have been consensus, wisdom, wall-to-wall wisdom, as you would say, that Mays was the better player back in those days?
Darned if I know. The only thing I can say is that, think when you're a kid and your father showed you the paper, you always saw this picture of Mickey Mantle kicking the batting helmet or smashing the water cooler. And there was all these interviews with Casey Stengel and others saying, gee, you know, if Mantle would only live up to his potential. You know, there was, he never learned to be a complete ball player. And what was the image we had of Mays? First of all, Mays was a complete player. There's almost no facet of the game that he wasn't great at. So there's nothing to knock, really. But there was that stigma that was attached to Mantle that he wasn't as good as he could have been. He struck out too much. Nobody was looking at the fact that Mantle was the hardest player in baseball to catch in a double play. We didn't think like that back then.
Of course, Mays did spend several years trying to hit balls into a gale force wind coming in off San Francisco Bay.
Well, that turns out to be another myth. I was really surprised at this, to find out that Mays, during those years, actually had more home runs
at Candlestick Park
than he had on the road. Now, to me, that is to Mays' credit. He actually learned how to hit the ball to the opposite field, whereas, for instance, somebody like Joe DiMaggio did not. DiMaggio lost a lot of his best power to the power alley, center field in Yankee Stadium. Mays adjusted.
Well, I grew up looking at the back of baseball cards and also baseball encyclopedias and New York Yankees yearbooks and seeing batting average, number of home runs, cared about that, pitchers won-lost records, learned to calculate an earned run average. But you go way beyond this. I mean, you have, what is your favorite measure of batting that you use?
Slob.
A slob.
Slugging times on base. I think a number of baseball analysts, I'm certainly not the first to come up with this, have calculated that the two batting numbers that correlate best with winning are on base average, which includes walks and hit by pitch, and slugging average, which tells you how many total bases you accumulate per at bat. And I like that because it takes in all aspects of what a hitter does. The hitter's job is to reach base and to advance the runners in front of him. That's why I like slob.
Well, what is it about baseball and measurements and ever-increasingly new measurements that are devised to measure baseball players?
Well, we can wax lyrical on things that we've seen. But what do we do about the players of earlier generations? I mean, we have to be able to put some faith in numbers to be a baseball fan, because let's face it, even if the player is current, even if you're following him now, you're not going to see 90% of what the guy does, maybe 99%, I don't know. But no matter how many games you watch, you're only seeing a fraction of what's out there. If you can't trust the numbers to some extent, what can you trust?
Now, one point of personal pleading here. It has been my observation that the shortstop of the New York Yankees, Derek Jeter, gets, and now, of course, you can put this to your researchers and see if it's true, gets on base with more infield errors than most players. And it would be my thesis it's because He is running so hard every time that lots of people must be rushing their throws or worrying if Jeter can beat it out. Shouldn't he get some credit for getting on for an error in that? If it were statistically anomalous how many times he gets on errors, shouldn't he get some credit for that?
You're absolutely right.
I think it's true. I don't know if there's
if it's happening to you more than it's happening to other people, then you should get some credit for forcing that to happen.
At least an on-base average, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, Alan Barra, thank you very much for talking with us about baseball today. Alan Barra is the author of Clearing the Bases, The Greatest Baseball Debates of the Last Century.